Welcome to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Our top story, dozens killed and about 200 still unaccounted for. That's after a blaze engulfed residential high-rises in Hong Kong, leaving residents devastated. Peace through strength. Taiwan will invest an additional $40 billion in its defense budget to counter China's growing threat in the region.
Taiwan, as the most important and most critical part of the first island chain, must demonstrate our determination and take on a greater responsibility in self-defense.
Japan seeks to ease tensions with China after the prime minister suggested a Chinese attack on Taiwan could trigger Japanese military action. From semiconductors to rare earths, the Trump administration is pouring billions of dollars to take up stakes in companies key to countering China. More than 30 people are dead as fire engulfs Hong Kong residential high-rise towers on Wednesday. Roughly 200 people are still unaccounted for. Local authorities have classified it as a Class 5 fire, the highest level of severity in Hong Kong.
Oh my God.
Over a dozen people are dead and an unknown number are still trapped after a massive fire engulfed multiple residential high-rise towers in Hong Kong on Wednesday, the government said. Fire crews were called to the Wong Fuk Court housing complex, home to 2,000 apartments in the northern Tai Po district, just before 3 p.m. Strong winds caused flames to spread to seven of the complex's eight blocks, some of which were clad in bamboo scaffolding. The Hong Kong Fire Services Department told Reuters it does not know the number of people who may still be inside the buildings.
Besides, the temperature inside the buildings concerned are very high, so it's quite difficult for us to enter the building and go upstairs to conduct firefighting and rescue operation.
This man told Reuters his wife was still inside the building as he watched smoke billow into the sky. Other residents stood on the street as their homes burned.
Of course I'm not feeling good, seeing so many blocks on fire, some of them burning all the way inside people's homes. How could anyone feel okay? Even though our block's fire seems like it's being put out, seeing the fires all around still makes you feel terrible.
Hong Kong is one of the last places in the world where bamboo is still widely used for scaffolding and construction. The government moved to start phasing out the city's use of it in March, citing safety. It announced that 50% of public construction works would be required to use metal frames instead.
Peace through strength. Taiwan will introduce a $40 billion supplementary defense budget to counter China's rising threat. On Wednesday, Taiwanese President Lai Ching-te said history has proven that trying to compromise in the face of aggression brought nothing but enslavement. This comes as China ramps up military pressure. Here's President Lai.
China's threats to Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific region are escalating. Recently, various types of military intrusions, maritime gray zones, and disinformation campaigns have been occurring in Japan, the Philippines, and around the Taiwan Strait. Taiwan, as the most important and most critical part of the first island chain, must demonstrate our determination and take on a greater responsibility in self-defense.
The budget will run from 2026 until 2033 and cover equipment, including missiles and drones, as well as the new T-Dome air defense system. Back in August, Lai said he hoped to increase Taiwan's defense spending to 5% of GDP by 2030. President Trump has called for it to go as high as 10%. Amid rising tensions over Taiwan, Japan says it wants to improve ties with China through constructive dialogue. Here's Japanese Prime Minister Sanae Takaichi speaking at its parliament on Wednesday.
Japan has always been open to a constructive dialogue with China. Therefore, it is my responsibility to maximum our national interest and build an even better, comprehensive relationship through dialogue from now on.
On Tuesday, Takaichi received her first phone call from President Trump since her recent comments on Taiwan sparked a diplomatic clash with China. During the call, Trump updated her on the latest in U.S.-China relations, including his call with Chinese leader Xi Jinping. Tensions flared earlier this month after Takaichi suggested that a hypothetical Chinese attack on Taiwan could prompt Japanese military action. Beijing responded with measures including travel restrictions to Japan and import restrictions on Japanese seafood. According to China's customs data, China is the largest importer of Japanese goods. In 2024, total trade between the two reached over $300 billion, with China importing more than $156 billion worth of goods from Japan. Prosecutors revealed new evidence in the case against Linda Sun, the former New York governor's aide accused of acting as an unregistered agent for China. Text messages shown in court Monday suggest Sun was working closely with Chinese diplomats, including multiple vice consuls and a high-ranking consul general. The messages indicate she worked to keep Taiwan's representatives from interacting with top New York officials. This effectively limited their access to then-Governor Andrew Cuomo and later Kathy Hochul. Sun served as the central point of contact between New York officials and representatives from Taiwan and China. Prosecutors also highlighted messages showing a notably warm relationship between Sun and senior Chinese officials. In one 2019 text to the consul general, Sun wrote that she had successfully blocked all formal and informal meetings between Taiwan's representatives and New York officials. Another message from early that year shows a Chinese vice consul praising Sun's role, calling her the most important hub for connecting with Cuomo and his team. The Trump administration is spending billions of dollars to buy stakes in private companies critical to U.S.-China competition. Some key strategic sectors include rare earths and semiconductors. Over the past 2 months, Washington has stepped up investments in rare earth companies to cut reliance on China. Rare earths are critical for making electric vehicles and advanced weapons. The New York Times is the first to report the story. While previous administrations used loans and grants to speed up development in certain sectors, it's unusual for the U.S. government to take equity stakes in private companies. The most recent example came during the 2008 financial crisis, when the government bought shares in companies like General Motors. These were companies whose collapse would have posed major risks to the U.S. economy. On Monday, the administration made a deal worth over $1 billion to take stakes in Vulcan Elements and ReElement Technologies. The move is to help them expand rare earth magnets productions here at home. The administration also took stakes in Intel, the semiconductor giant, as well as Westinghouse, a nuclear power company, U.S. Steel, and several other companies in critical minerals. U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said the administration won't take ownership stakes in industry that aren't strategic. He added that they need to be careful not to overreach. The government intervention has raised concerns among some experts of potential market distortions. A White House spokesman pushed back, saying that if business-as-usual policies had worked, America wouldn't be reliant on foreign countries for critical minerals and semiconductors, which are key to U.S. national security. He added that the government's involvement is to encourage further investment by the private sector. The U.S. recently joined several other nations to push for an end to human rights violations in China. Just days later, pro-CCP groups harassed peaceful protesters in Australia. NTD's Melina Weisskopf has more.
The United States has joined a group of 14 other countries, including Australia, Japan, the United Kingdom, and a few others, in signing a statement to the UN calling for the immediate release of people who the Chinese Communist Party has illegally detained for exercising their fundamental freedom of faith. In the statement, the countries raised concerns that ethnic and religious minority groups, particularly Uyghurs, Christians, Tibetans, Falun Gong practitioners, and others, have faced targeted repression, including through separation of children from their families, torture, and the destruction of cultural heritage. The countries are pressing the United Nations to hold the Chinese Communist Party accountable in a meaningful way to combat this human rights issue. It comes just 1 week after the CCP illegally arrested nearly 20 leaders of Zion Church. That's one of the largest underground Christian churches inside of China. One of those leaders, Erza Jin, who's the founder of Zion Church, his daughter testified to lawmakers on Capitol Hill last week. She's urging U.S. leaders to do more to get prisoners of conscience like her father freed.
I'm sometimes indeed fearful. After all, I know that I seek to expose and hold account the second most powerful country in the world. Yet as a Christian, I believe that we are asked to take courage and speak truth, and that God who created heaven and earth will stand by our side.
This comes as a top Chinese Communist Party leader, Zhao Leiji, is visiting Australia right now. Zhao was the subject of a push for sanctions here in the U.S. last month due to human rights issues. Because of his high rank, he plays a lead role in the persecution of Falun Gong, a meditation discipline centered on aligning oneself with truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance. Amid Zhao's visit to Australia, a group of Falun Gong practitioners in the country peacefully protested, trying to call attention to the widespread persecution that he's engaged with, including forcibly removing organs from prisoners of conscience. While those protesters were holding banners shedding light on this issue, some members from a pro-CCP group by the name of Fu Qing Association tried to block these banners from being seen and harassed protesters. One of the protesters, Cao Juxing, had his shirt ripped open by one of the members from the pro-CCP group. Another protester was hit in the head with the flagpole. This isn't a one-off incident happening in Australia. Anywhere Falun Gong has a presence, which is throughout much of the world, there are pro-CCP groups directed to harass and threaten them to try to export the CCP's persecution of the practice outside of its own borders. This was also a key focus in last week's hearing on Capitol Hill. Lawmakers and U.S. leaders are actively working to expose and stop the CCP's transnational oppression here in the U.S. and abroad. Reporting from Washington, D.C., Melina Weisskopf, NTD News.
Coming up, tensions between the U.S. and Nicolas Maduro's Venezuelan regime is rising. It's prompting China and Russia to reassess their strategy in the region. And with President Trump hinting at an end to the Russia-Ukraine war, what can we expect from China? How does the No Limits partnership with Russia fit into a post-war Ukraine? Retired Brigadier General Dave Stilwell joins us to break it down.
Why would any government sit down with PRC and sign an agreement when we know those are empty promises, there's no intention to follow through? I'd rather just do what we do and make the PRC react to us.
More on that after the break here on China in Focus. Welcome back to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Tensions between the U.S. and the Venezuelan regime of Nicolas Maduro have shifted how China and Russia evaluate their strategy in the region. Our Washington correspondent, Luis Martinez, breaks down the links between the Maduro regime and major U.S. adversaries.
According to Nicolas Maduro, an indicted narco-terrorist, Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, the leaders of China and Russia, sent him letters expressing their solidarity and support amid rising tensions with the United States.
It is impressive how a movement of solidarity is rising everywhere in support of the victorious effort of the indestructible people of Venezuela in the face of these threats, psychological, political, diplomatic wars, whatever they do. However they do it, wherever they do it, they will not be able to defeat Venezuela. We are invincible.
The U.S. government has designated the Cartel of the Suns, the cartel that Nicolas Maduro is accused of leading, as a foreign terrorist organization.
Venezuela is run by a narco-terrorist ring that traffics drugs, weapons, human traffics as well, into the United States.
Top Venezuelan officials have been using the Venezuelan military and its installations to traffic drugs. The survival of the regime is the only thing keeping them from facing justice.
Hoy Marco Rubio, ustedes saben, sacó otro refrito.
Today, Marco Rubio, you know, pulled out another rehash about the Cartel of the Suns, that now it's a terrorist organization. Ridiculous. They're ridiculous. They repeat and repeat the story about drug trafficking, the drug trafficking story.
The regime is accused of killing over 8,000 civilians for resisting their authority. And unofficial results show that over 80% of Venezuelans voted against Maduro in last year's presidential elections.
So we know, we have information that maybe the top echelon of the military forces in Venezuela may be with Maduro, and they're going to flee with him. But the middle and lower ranks are with the opposition.
The Venezuelan regime has been economically propped up by China and Russia and has close ties with Iran and its proxy terrorist organizations Hamas and Hezbollah.
Venezuela has been the launching pad, the hub for our enemies, the Iranian, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Cubans, the Nicaraguans, people that hate the United States, and the only thing they want to do is do harm to us and to our young Americans.
It's important to note that the Venezuelan regime also provides oil at discounted prices to Nicaragua and Cuba, the only other two dictatorships in the region, and allowing for them to survive. Reporting from Washington, D.C., Luis Eduardo Martinez, NTD News.
President Trump is indicating that peace efforts between Russia and Ukraine are finally gaining traction. Here's what the president said about ongoing negotiations, as well as a slew of issues closer to home as Thanksgiving approaches.
President Trump says negotiations between Russia and Ukraine are advancing, with U.S. officials preparing for high-level meetings with Moscow and Kyiv. It's part of a revised proposal aimed at ending the nearly four-year war. Speaking aboard Air Force One Tuesday, Trump said the U.S. will continue high-level diplomacy, but he won't personally meet with Presidents Vladimir Putin or Volodymyr Zelensky until negotiators reach further breakthroughs. Trump confirmed that what began as a 28-point peace plan has now been refined to 22 points.
Well, that was just a map. Well, that wasn't a map. That was not a plan. It was a concept. And from there, they're taking each one of the 28 points, and then you get down to 22 points. A lot of them were solved, and actually very favorably solved.
Trump said Europe will play a major role in shaping the final proposal and is deeply invested in seeing the war end. A major challenge, according to Trump, is determining a border that does not cut through towns or major infrastructure.
You want to have a border? You can't have a border that goes through a highway or border that goes through the middle of a town, so that it doesn't work. So it's a long, complicated process. And very, very sad because so many people have been killed.
The president also downplayed concerns about potential Ukrainian concessions, saying Russia is already advancing in disputed areas.
The way it's going, if you look, it's just moving in one direction. So eventually that's land that over the next couple of months might be gotten by Russia anyway. So do you want to fight and lose another 50, 60,000 people? Or do you want to do something now?
With tensions simmering in Asia between China and Japan, and with President Trump hinting at an end to the Russia-Ukraine war, what's been China's role? Retired Brigadier General Dave Stilwell joins us to unpack China's history of empty promises. He's the former U.S. Defense Attaché in Beijing and former Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of East Asian and Pacific Affairs. General Stilwell, thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you back on the show.
Good to be back.
Now, there's been several headlines recently, especially on China's broken promises when it comes to soybeans, fentanyl, all these other issues, or, you know, the previous trade deal under the first Trump term. But talk to us, is it broken promises or is it empty promises? How should we read this?
When I was at State Department in 2019, we talked about this, and the words matter. And broken promises means there was some intention of following through and then changed their mind or conditions changed, and therefore they, in some ways, are not blamed. You can't blame them for doing it. These are empty promises. They never intended to follow through with any of these things, right? The best example is Hong Kong, where they, prior to basically ignoring it or tearing it up, in like May of 2020, they said, we consider the joint declaration on Hong Kong scraps of paper. So they never intended to follow through with that obligation once it became inconvenient. So they will go through, they'll follow through with these things as long as they don't cause them to lose any advantage. But as soon as they lose advantage, they walk away and they back out. And we've been too quick to alibi their inability or their failure to live up to their contracts. Too many people have then bought into what they say in agreement, then the good side gives what they're going to give, while the PRC side never gives in return. We've seen this over and over again. So if we regard them as empty promises, we'll be less eager to go sit down at the table and sign an agreement that we know they're not going to follow through.
I want to dig into that because right now, you know, in terms of geopolitics, there's the current Japan-China tensions playing out again, if you will. And China's foreign minister Wang Yi is weighing in, saying that, you know, Japan needs credibility. There needs to be that. It's a similar phrase that he's used before. He put out a statement in 2024, March, saying China's four commitments to hot topic issues. And in that, he says credibility comes before influence. But given China's history here, how should we read China's use of the term credibility?
Just pure irony. The fact that they use the word credibility, given their history of never following through on any agreement, is just, you know, shocking. But it's typical PRC propaganda gaslighting, where they blame the other side of doing exactly what they're doing. And in psychological terms, this works. It makes the, you know, the side that's being offended, the losing side, rethink what they're doing and perhaps blame themselves. When the Philippines took them to the tribunal in 2015, the PRC says, oh, well, we're not bound by that. When in fact they signed documents that says, that they would participate in any sort of tribunals, et cetera. Xi Jinping's comments in the Rose Garden in 2015 with President Obama, saying we will not militarize those islands, and doing the exact opposite thing. Has the PRC been held accountable for its failure, repeated failure, to live up to any commitment it makes once it becomes Bufangia, right? Once it's no longer inconvenient? I can give you a lot more examples. Pretty much any agreement, most recently the agreement with the U.S. side to stop slow leaking the movement of super magnets and rare earth elements. As soon as they signed that piece of paper, they backed out of it. And so my question again is, why would any government sit down with PRC and sign an agreement when we know those are empty promises, there's no intention to follow through? I'd rather just do what we do and make the PRC react to us.
Digging into that, when it comes to foreign policy, because right now there's, you know, President Trump is saying he thinks the U.S. can get Russia and Ukraine to a peace plan very soon, as soon as perhaps Thanksgiving, right? And on that note, we've seen in the past where China has wanted to be seen as the mediator on the world stage, whether that's Russia, Ukraine, or even, you know, in the Middle East when that conflict was, you know, at its peak, if you will. Given the history, though, here with these negotiations happening with Russia, Ukraine, how do you see China fitting into them?
Again, Wang Yi weighed in very early on this, saying, hey, we got this. Let us mediate between Russia and Ukraine. And both sides, I mean, just immediately rejected that. Wow, what a slap in the face. What's interesting, back to broken or empty promises, is 2011 and 2014, Beijing and Kyiv, Ukraine, signed a strategic partnership that said we will protect each other's sovereignty and territorial integrity. And I kept waiting for the Ukraine side to call them on that and say, didn't you say that you were going to weigh in on our behalf now that your friend Russia is invading? And one, Ukraine has never called them on it, probably because they realized China wasn't going to do anything. But two, nobody's held the PRC respond or accountable for that empty promise. Why? 2011, it was when the Varyag, that they wanted that carrier, which they claimed was going to be casino credibility. We knew it wasn't going to be a casino. We knew they were developing an aircraft carrier program. 2011, they got the Varyag. In 2014, they were having problems with parts and engineering, and so they went back, had this great powwow. They all shook hands, and they said again, China will, again, protect Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity, part of the strategic partnership. That means nothing. So the fact that Ukraine isn't jumping at the chance to have the PRC mediate is explainable by the fact that the PRC has been a very unreliable partner. Lack of credibility, and that points to a government without legitimacy.
Well, General Stilwell, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here. See you.
That's all for today's China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. If you have any feedback on the show or have something you'd like to see us cover, send us an email at chinainfocus@ntd.com. We'd love to hear from you. For on-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app. Thanks for watching. See you tomorrow.